Our Man in China, Episode 2, An Eye-Opener. What an eye-opener living in China as a Westerner was, but this is the title of Episode 2 for another reason. And no, it is not a racist slur. In fact, it's an operation every day more popular among China's elite families in achieving a Western look. Today is the fashion to have new eyes. Whereas in Colombia and Venezuela, young girls, even before they're fully developed, are gifted breast implants for their 16th birthday, middle-class Chinese girls have the skin around their eyes cut open to give the appearance of bigger eyes. Well before this, in the early part of the 20th century, Western ideas flooded China. Chinese intellectuals that had studied abroad returned to offer new ideas. A rejection of the Confucian system that had been installed for centuries opened up new horizons. Added to this, a battle for internal control between two parties who would not agree on one single path forward and constant struggles with Japan allowed China to open its doors to a new, progressive way of thinking. The appearance of larger eyes was just one of a number of customs and behaviours I saw during my 14 months in China. So, how did I find myself in China to begin with? When I set off for China, I was 25 and I had put together nothing but debt, 6 years after having dropped out of university aged 19. I didn't smoke during the day, but I could easily go through 40 cigarettes on a night out. I had virtually no respect for anyone and I disliked myself as much as the society I was brought up in. I come from Redhill, picturesque Surrey in England. Surrey, don't you know? But they don't print postcards of Redhill. There was only one nightclub and it was a disgrace. As it was each and every time it rebranded itself, nothing ever changed in Redhill. Yet I was sick to the back teeth of the UK for more than sheer restlessness in a small town. Fights outside pubs, which stemmed from another reason for my departure, the booze culture, shots, mixing, get as drunk as you can in as short a space of time as you can. Be a lad, get wasted. This was and is the British drinking culture. Drinking establishments only aided our self-destruction through cheap and free shots, offering doubles for an extra quid. They would only throw you out once you had emptied your wallet and relieved yourself in the corner of the pub, or snorted cigarette butts from ashtrays. Some of the shenanigans we pulled were disgraceful. Did the British drinking culture create us this way, or did we create the culture itself? Then there was the weather. Show me anyone from beyond our shores who can put up with that drizzle. With such a rubbish, gloomy climate, was it any wonder we spent so long in pubs? Britain and London in particular must indeed be places of wonder far beyond sites such as Buckingham Palace and Big Ben. For the sun, beaches and pleasures that the world has to offer, tourists continue to flock to this costly land. If life is indeed a journey, I had barely taken a step. Having not had the financial support or the desire to go to university, I took out a £10,000 additional bank loan alongside my government loan. It was a loan I should never have been given. The pimple-faced youngster gave it to me on the basis I worked 20 hours a week during term time, and with the aim of appeasing my well-educated parents, I set off for uni nonetheless. If nothing else, to enjoy myself. Working in nightclubs and pool bars, I was determined to get through, but after only 16 hours of lectures across 3 terms and with long-term liver damage to boot, I left. A year of weed, low-quality sherry, 50 seasons of Championship Manager under my belt, and the odd notch on the bedpost passed by so quickly I thought it prudent to leave. I had not the concentration, work rate, or want to stay, and my health had suffered. On leaving uni, I weighed in at 9 stone, just shy of 60 kilograms. Not pretty for someone more than 6 foot in height, 184 centimetres. Uni wasn't for me. There is no shame in not going to university or not knowing what to do. Just don't give up on looking for the path. You'll be surprised where it might take you and where you find it. So where did I go next? Where did that path lead? My grades had earned me a university place and therefore I felt I deserved more in life than what was on offer for a school leaver. Potential employers saw me as someone who hadn't stuck it out, and for some, I was a uni toff. To others, I was a dropout. The next 4 years saw me go from one dead-end job to another, from the tedium of a retirement company, where the staff hung up their personality with their coat each morning, to putting pints, and on to struggling to manage 150 industrial temps in my first recruitment position. Surely there was more to life than this. It came to pass that during a stint back at my parents in the Midlands, one topic arose twice in a week: TEFL, teaching English as a foreign language. Obtaining a TEFL certificate involves doing a 20-hour weekend course on teaching English, allowing you to work almost anywhere in the world, getting reasonably well paid for it in the process. Although I later found myself working at furniture events, flogging homes to China's upper class, as I laid strewn across king-sized beds gazing into the eyes of a French girl, or adorning show homes where I walked around dressed as a Victorian troubadour, frills and all, it was TEFL and teaching that got me by for the majority of my 14th month stay in China. Age 17, I had failed with my maiden attempt to live overseas, but armed with a TEFL, and at the age of 25, I was confident this would give me a head start out there in the world. Once I had taken the exam, and I use exam lightly, it is nothing but a huge scam that involves no demonstration of teaching ability whatsoever. I closed my eyes and placed my finger downwards on a world map. China, it was. 20 CVs later, and I had a Skype interview booked. A month on, and I touched down at Shanghai's Pudong Airport on the back of one interview with a shifty English headmaster based in Suzhou, Jiangsu province, and roughly 100 kilometers inland from Shanghai. Frankly, I hadn't known what to expect. I did know I was ready to make something of myself. I envisaged an alcohol-free paradise where I would sip green tea and practice Tai Chi. The days of knocking back pints and spirits would be behind me. I would better myself. I'd enjoy life more than people I left behind who laboured through a week in the office only to get off their face for 2 days afterwards. Then there was the incentive of learning a language. I would study Mandarin instead of chasing skirt, and in doing so come back with a string to my bow where a degree might have been. I did not expect the beer to flow like the Yangtze River, nor did I foresee living inside a Western bubble, submerged in an underground world of vice, fueled by crystal meth.